And welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part two of Halloween Party on Fear Street. Dune Reads Fear Street. This has taken forever to get up for two reasons, really. Or for lots of reasons. But I normally blame being busy and shit, which I have been crazy busy. I had my birthday, and then I went to Comic-Con, and I was sick, and then I was so broke, I was so stressed out, I couldn't do anything. But the two main reasons I haven't done it is, is the discouraging factors of... Fear Street was a terrible plan. The reason I started this podcast was because I was doing other podcasts with people, and doing shit with people sucks. You have to depend on them, and it's not the dynamic that you could have just by yourself, and I feel like I can carry a show by myself, and then I don't have to wait for people's schedules, and this and that, and all those other things. So, anyway, I was taking input on this, and the two things that happen from taking input... I'm gonna go adjust the air conditioning. Okay. Anyway, the two things that happened or whatever was... It was a good plan from other people, but it wasn't my plan to do the Fear Street books. And Fear Street, each one to record it, is going to... Each section, so three different sections per book, is going to take me 4 hours each. So every time I was, like, going to start this, I was like, I have 8 more full hours of work to do for no money. And it's not... I think the books aren't as good, because I think Goosebumps works because it's four kids and blah, blah, blah. But it's stupid making fucking tit jokes when the book includes tits, you know? So it just seemed like, oh my god, I have... Before I can actually do a book I want to do, I have 8 hours of unpaid shitty work to do. And then the other thing was... At the, you know, after being convinced by Giovanni to put the PayPal link on the Dune Reads Goosebumps site, which he's like, it'll be motivating, you'll get at least $200 a month, it'll be awesome. I was still doing consistently at that point, and got the first $10 ever, and then nothing. So the factor that was supposed to be motivating was just like, hey... People are yelling at you constantly to record stuff, and instead of being like, you know what, I will record it, it was like, fuck you, now you can pay me, and you guys all claimed you were going to, and no one ever fucking did, so fuck it, fuck you guys, stop demanding things for free. So I was just getting angry, and that was super discouraging for me. Anyway, I have no idea what's going on in this book. I just had two very strong rum and diets, and then now I just took two shots of tequila. Just to get back in the swing of this, and now I'm drinking Bud Light Platinum because I bought them because I went to my first NFL game because I live walking distance to a stadium, and I walked over there and stuff, but I figured I had to buy Bud Light Platinum to play the role of someone into football, which I'm not. I'm into Morrissey and Borderlands and my pets and My Chemical Romance and getting stupid tattoos. Anyway, I have no idea what's going on in this shitty book. This is the longest intro ever, but fuck that. I'm back. But I'm not really back. It's going to take me forever to do the next part of it. But then it's going to be done, and then I'll get back to my crazy release schedule I was on, because Goosebumps is what I do. I don't read Fear Street. Fuck Fear Street. Chapter number 6. For a moment, nobody moved or spoke. Then, several people began screaming at once. Ah! Terry's heart was beating so fast he could hear it. I was going to say barely hear it, but if your heart you can barely... whatever. I should have just made a beating off joke and moved on. The vast room seemed to spin, then tilt. He grabbed a chair back to steady himself. It took a while for his head to clear. Sounds came back. He could hear individual voices. Oh no! No! Is it real? Who is it? Somebody call 911! Damn, I wish I had any idea what the fuck was going on in this book. Because it's fucking exciting, and I'm so confused that I forgot completely about it. I should stop recording these blackout drunk. Wait, no, I shouldn't. Tightly holding Nikki's hand, Terry began to move toward the body with the other guests. Oh, by the way, it was Nina that gave me $10, so thank you again. That was encouraging at first, and then everyone else, fuck you. He could see now that it was someone dressed in a skeleton costume, but who? Everyone seemed reluctant to get any nearer. Finally, Alex squatted down. He tentatively reached out to touch the body, when suddenly, the skeleton jumped up. Trick or treat! The skeleton yelled like a douchebag and collapsed, laughing uncontrollably back on the rug. It was Les Whittle. Whittle Les! There were gasps of surprise, then laughter, nervous at first, built until the room nearly shook from it. One for the wimp side, shouted Ricky in triumph. Great trick, Les. Terry clapped him on the shoulder. It was good, agreed Trisha in a shaky voice. But you had us all scared to death. Why didn't you tell the rest of the team you're going to do it? Because Justine and I didn't cook it up till just this morning, said Les, still laughing. He showed them all the knife. It was just a knife handle. The blood was the kind that comes in a tube. Yeah, I got a blood tube for it. Like a boner? Like a tube of blood is a boner? Good stuff. I found these in a joke shop and thought it would be a shame to waste them, he explained. It was the easiest thing in the world. Yeah, well, for your information, none of us was scared at all. Wasn't it none of us were scared? Said Murphy. That's just the sort of wimpy trick a wimp would pull. Les wasn't at all perturbed, a word that would never be in a Goosebumps book. Sure, Murph, tell us another one, he said, chuckling. He put on his horn-rimmed glasses like Janine Garofalo in the 90s. Over his skeleton mask, it made him appear incongruous. I'm going to Google that later and find out what it means, and then I'll inform you fuckers. Like a studious corpse. I've been hiding in the kitchen for half an hour, he said. Where's the food? I'm starved. Most of the kids, exhausted by dancing and the scare, collapsed on the antique furniture, eating and talking. Well, 90s kids, you should have taken ecstasy like all other 90s kids who danced. Then you could dance all night and then sleep all day the next day. What a dumb trick, said David, his legs thrown over the arm of an antique rocking chair, like the ones you'd find at Cracker Barrel. You're just jealous because you didn't think of it, said Trisha. We've thought of better tricks, David said. Much better. You'll see what I mean, unless you get some sense and go the fuck home now. Never, said Ricky. You jocks don't have a chance. You're the ones who don't have a chance, said Alex, like a total jock. But I gotta hand it to Les. He made a pretty good corpse. Terry didn't say anything. Nikki was sitting, turned away from everyone, eating another plate full of food like a fatty fat shit. He was glad he couldn't hear the conversation because it was probably just her getting mad. It would probably just get her mad again. Okay, so Nikki's a she. Right, N-I-K-I, not like Nikki Six, which is also, I think it has two K's. Oh, God, remember that guy put out the book that was called The Heroin Diaries to be edgy, but it was really just about doing blow? Occasionally. What a douchebag. Molly Crew sucks. So what do you guys think? Asked Alex, jovially, sitting next to Terry and Nikki on the arm of an antique wooden bench. Think your team can go the distance? We've got a better chance than your team, muttered Terry. We have some brains on our side. Alex laughed. He wanted it to sound like a good-natured laugh, but Terry knew better. Great costume, Nikki, Alex said, admiring her appreciatively. Thanks, Nikki said. I made it myself. You always could do anything, said Alex. I remember that great dress you made for the freshman dance. You were the best-looking girl there. Well, thanks, said Nikki. Her eyes were sparkling, and Terry forced himself to take a slow, deep breath. He hated himself for feeling jealous, but he couldn't help it. After all, Nikki was sitting next to him, holding his hand, so why did he feel jealous of Alex? Why did he want to punch him in the face? Say, Nikki, said Alex teasingly, don't you think it's about time you joined the jock team? I just imagine all the jocks like this to be like Todd on Scrubs, where it's just, I guess I only imagine them that way because I'm constantly making dick jokes, huh? Huh, the more you know. Nikki's eyes changed. She was no longer flirtatious, but sad now, and a little angry. Oh, will you two just stop it with your idiotic fag games? I said 100 times, I'm not on either side! Ooh, she's pansexual, like every kid on Vampire Freaks, until they grow up and realize they're just gay. She abruptly stood up and walked toward the fireplace. The dance music had started again, and Terry was surprised to see Nikki ask Ricky to dance. Nikki and Ricky sitting in a tricky... What's with her? Alex asked Terry. I guess she's been hanging out with you for so long, she's forgotten how to take a joke. Hey, Beale, you're the joke! Good stuff. Terry muttered. She doesn't like the whole contest idea. Hey, man, I thought you were supposed to be a good talker. You know, debate team and everything. And you think you couldn't talk Nikki into joining your team? Whoa! Nikki makes her own decisions. Terry stood up. I don't own her. Wow. Heavy talk, Ryan. Back off, okay? Alex leaned away from Terry and put his hands as if shielding himself. You and I used to be friends. Remember? Used to be, Terry thought. Those are the key words. He realized that Alex was reaching out to him. Alex was deliberately reminding him of what good buddies they had been until very recently. Alex was staring at him expectantly, but Terry would... Oh, no! Oh, no! I've been attacked by the Bud Light Plant! Oh, refreshing. But Terry couldn't respond. He just had a bad feeling about Alex. He couldn't pretend to want him as a friend again. Alex's eyes filled with disappointment. Later, man, he said abruptly and got up quickly from the bench. Alex walked toward the glowing fireplace with a swagger. I just saw today the IHOP pancakes commercial where they're... It aired on TV, apparently, but... It just cuts about how great their pancakes are and how rooty-tooty, fresh and fruity their meals are. And then it gets cut to a, like, nerdy-looking black guy. And they just cast it because they've never seen a black person before, aside on TV. And then the guy goes, these pancakes have swag. These pancakes have swag. YOLO. The song on the tape ended. Alex stepped up to Nikki and Ricky and smoothly took Nikki's hand, as if he owns it or something, Terry thought, watching with growing discomfort. Trying not to look as if he were watching, Terry kept sneaking glances at Alex and Nikki. They were dancing to a fast number, and Nikki was smiling. Does she have to smile? Terry asked himself. Maybe he would go over and interrupt them, but that would make Nikki angry, and Terry really didn't want any of that confrontation with Alex. He watched some of the others for a while. Ricky and Trisha were dancing together again. While he watched, Ricky said something that made Trisha laugh so hard she almost fell over. Maybe he told her the only joke that has ever existed in all time. I'll tell it to you, Franklin, because you're watching me. Hey, Franklin. What's the best time to go to the dentist? What'd you say, Franklin? Did you say 2:30? It's the only joke ever. David was dancing with Angela. He was a pretty good dancer, and Terry realized that he didn't really know David. He was quieter than the other jocks and didn't seem to take competition as seriously as the rest of them. The song ended, and another began. Nikki was still dancing with Alex. Enough is enough, Terry told himself. He started across to them when a musical voice stopped him. Going somewhere! Terry twisted around to see Justine standing behind a love seat. I thought I'd dance? Said Terry. Isn't that a coinkydink? Said Justine, but in actuality said coincidence. I was just thinking the same thing. How about dancing with me? She gave him her warmest smile, and Terry felt the knot in his stomach start to dissolve. Well, sure, he said. I'd love to. Good, said Justine. By the way, they're missing a quotation mark in there. That's why you should let people edit your books, R.L. Stine. Good, said Justine. She took his hand and led him over near the fireplace and threw him in. The end. Just kidding. It didn't get caught up. That's good stuff. A slow tune was playing on the stereo. Terry saw Nikki whirl past with Alex the Silver Prince, but she didn't see him. Up close, Terry became very aware of Justine's animal warmth, ooh, and her perfume. A faint, musky scent, different from anything he'd ever smelled before. Possibly he could smell her vagina. She settled even closer, pressing her body tightly against his. "How are you enjoying the party?" she asked huskily. "The party in my pants." Oh, shit! No, just kidding. She didn't say that. "It's great," he said sincerely. "I think everyone is really in a party mood now." "Good," said Justine. "It's just important to me for all of you to enjoy yourselves." "Everything's perfect," Terry said, talking to distract himself from the way he was feeling, much like Dune always does. "The food, the music, the lights. You've thought of everything. You and your uncle." As a matter of fact, Uncle Philip's up in the attic now, she said, preparing a few extra surprises. Oh, shit. "How'd you ever dream all this stuff up?" Terry asked. "We've had a long time to think about it," said Justine. "But enough questions. Let's enjoy the music. And each other." She pressed even closer to him, and for a moment, Terry forgot everything except for the scent and closeness of Justine. Ooh, yeah. The tape ended and the dancers broke apart. Justine squeezed Terry's hand and went to put on a new tape. Guiltily, Terry realized that Nikki was standing by the fire staring at him. She didn't look jealous or even angry. There was a strange, unreadable expression on her face. "Get used to it, Terry. You can't read women, am I right? Up top, fellas." "Scarlet, stop eating the shoelace of my shoe. Scarlet, I got one pair of nice shoes. I have one pair of Doc Martens that I've had for like 12 years that I wear to like every wedding, but also wear like hiking and shit. It's the stupidest plan in the world." Anyway. Alex said something to her, and Nikki shook her head. She started to cross over to where Terry was, but stopped suddenly, her eyes wide with surprise. Everyone heard a tremendous thumping at the door, along with a growling roar from further away. Roar. The noise was so intense that Nikki picked up the vibrations. Her mouth dropped open as she turned toward the front of the room. Ricky pulled open the door, and the roaring became a deafening blast of sound. Then, as everyone watched in shock, two gleaming motorcycles bombed right into the living room, just like in the movie Weird Science! Weird Science! Boop doop doop boop 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 boop. Yeah! Waiting for the police sirens to go by. Go by. Chapter 27 is being read now. All Terry and the others could do at first was stare in shock at the motorcycles. The riders were dressed in leather jackets and pants, and their faces were completely covered with shiny black helmets. You know what's funny about bikers? About a lot of things, too. If you're an adult who dresses in such a way that they sell your wardrobe as a Party City costume to kids, you might be thinking about, growing up a little bit. Just like old Dune, who dresses like your alcoholic uncle. Lots of Tommy Bahama Dockers and all stained in liquor. Oh, wow! Someone yelled over the thunderous noise. Rad! Really rad! Ricky shouted, like Dune and people that are in the early 90s. I still find it weird that the rest of the country doesn't use the term rad or awesome anymore. His idea of a funny comment. The whole house scene reminded Terry of the movie Animal House, which he and Nikki had rented a few weeks before. That movie had a guy riding a motorcycle up and down the stairs. Where I'm recording this right now on the H1. I can see a thing of John Belushi in front of me, or a poster. I have a big Blues Brothers poster. It's just funny. You know, Animal House. That's all Pluto. Alright. Was this another one of Justine's surprises? Terry wondered, enjoying the crazy, chaotic scene. With a final roar, two bikers cut their machines. Then sudden quiet was almost deafening. The bigger of the two riders removed his helmet and got off the bike. With a sinking feeling, Terry saw that it was Bobby McCory. Bobby's eyes were bloodshot, and he had a nasty expression on his face. "Nice party," he said sarcastically, and possibly, readers, stoned off pot. I know, we'll see if he is. Let's carry on. "Yeah," agreed Marty Danforth, the other rider. He twirled his helmet in his hands as he checked out the room. "Great place you got here. Too bad we had to knock so loud." "For some reason, the door was locked," Bobby added. "It's almost like you didn't want us." Justine stepped forward, her face a mask of fury. "Get the fuck out of here," she said in an icy voice. "Get out," said Bobby. "We just got here." "I told you you weren't invited," Justine said. She didn't sound frightened at all, Terry noticed, but so angry her voice was shaking. "Yeah, well, we told you we don't like to be left out of things," Bobby said, forcing a tough guy sneer on his face. Now, Philip stepped quickly to the center of the room. "Who are these two young men?" he asked Justine. "Two clowns from high school," Justine told him. "They're not on the list." Philip approached Bobby and Marty. He had an expression on his face like a teacher who was disappointed with his class. Terry could see that Philip didn't realize how mean Bobby and Marty could be. "If you leave right now," said Philip, "I won't call the police." "Hear that?" Marty asked Bobby, his sneer frozen in place like a bad Elvis impersonator. "He won't call the police." Both boys laughed. "Don't do us any favors, man," said Bobby, and he shoved Philip hard in the chest. With a gasp, Philip fell backward and banged into the table. "Uncle Phil!" cried Justine in horror. Well, she said Philip, but I grew up with a Fresh Prince. Several of the kids rushed to Philip's aid. That's going to be my new statement. I know I just dropped the N-bomb, but how can I be racist? I've seen every episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And then they'll have to believe me. Nikki, her dark eyes wide with fright, ran to Terry, gripping his hand. "Sorry about that. It was an accident," Bobby said, slurring his words. He stumbled over a floorboard, and Terry realized he'd been drinking. Wow. Finally in Goosebumps. After what, this is going to be episode 63, I think, of Dune Reads Goosebumps. There's finally one character that's actually slurring his words. It's not just me reading poorly. Ah, that is excellent. I have a problem with alcohol. By now, the other kids were recovering from the shock of the biker's entrance. "Go home," several shouted. "Get out of here, you creeps." Bobby and Marty ignored the others.
"Nice place you got here," said Bobby. "Kind of looks like your place, huh, Marty?"
They both laughed as if Bobby had just made a hilarious joke.
"Why don't we help him out a little and just clear away some of the cobwebs?"
said Marty. He unhooked a chain from one of his belt loops and with a flick of his wrist swung it at the cutouts over the fireplace. Instantly, they fell to the floor in tatters. Terry stared in disbelief. Why didn't someone do something? Now, Marty started to wreck the decorations over the window. Terry couldn't stand it anymore. "Hey, man, don't do that," he said, like Crispin Glover in Back to the Future. He took a step toward Marty, but Bobby moved faster. Terry felt his head jerk back as if he'd just been hit by a fucking truck. The next thing he knew, he was on his back, with Nikki's face very close and frightened-looking gazing down at him. He tried to sit up, but Nikki pushed him back down. "Don't try to move," she whispered. "Uh-oh, the skinny guy tripped," Bobby said, grinning. He stared at the others menacingly. Others was capitalized. It was very strange. "Hope nobody else trips or anything." Marty laughed. They slapped each other high fives with their back black gloved hands. These guys sure knew how to have a good time, thought Terry. Whatever they'd been drinking or smoking had made them think they were hilarious. So this is just Goosebumps, but they mention things that, like, 13-year-olds are aware of. Oh, whatever. I'm going to do a PSA. Hi, this is Dune from Dune Reads Goosebumps. And like the Incredible Hulk, he's always angry, but I'm always drunk. That being said, don't smoke. Don't smoke anything at all. You can snort things, but don't smoke. Thanks, Dune. Justine stepped forward again. She was still angry, but Terry saw that now she was also frightened. All right, guys, she said. So I made a mistake. I was wrong not to invite you to the party, but everything was planned for 9 people who are already here. If you just leave now, I promise I'll have a special party just for you next week. Hey, that's okay, said Bobby. We're having a great time. Don't sweat it. He walked over to the food. Ricky, Angela, and Trisha, who had been standing there, quickly edged away. Bobby took a big bite of one of the hors d'oeuvres, then spat it out. Yuck, he bellowed. What is this stuff? It tastes like fish. He turned angrily to Justine. Have you got any real food here? Chips? Pizza? There's plenty of pizza on the shelf over there. Take what you want and... What about drinks? Interrupted Marty. All I see here is kid stuff. He turned to Philip, who was sitting on a low stool now, looking sick. What do you keep the beer, man? Marty asked like a total douchebag. I don't drink, said Philip curtly. I never kept alcohol in my house. I don't believe you, said Marty. What kind of host are you? My friend and I are thirsty. He grabbed Philip by his lapels. Stop it! Alex's sudden yell stopped Marty for a moment. Like a silver streak, Alex crossed the room and grabbed Marty, pulling him away from Philip. Marty bellowed in rage. Alex's triumph was short-lived. A moment later, Bobby grabbed Alex from behind and fucked him. The end. Then he held on to him while Marty kicked him hard in the stomach, which is what he was into. Ooh, oh, oh! With a gasp of pain, Alex fell to the floor and lay curled in a ball, gasping for breath. Aw, man, another accident, said Bobby, stepping over Alex. Well, the guests looked on helplessly. I guess there is a P in helplessly, whatever. Bobby and Marty began to ransack the beautiful old living room, opening doors and cabinets and throwing everything they found onto the floor. Whenever anyone made a move to stop them, Bobby twirled his chain menacingly. Looks like they could use Snake. Like Ace's friend Snake? Like from that obscure... Oh, whatever. They found a bottle of red wine somewhere and began trading it back and forth. This has got to stop, Terry told himself. They may be tough, but we've got them outnumbered. Across the room, David caught his eye and nodded in the direction of the cycles. Terry nodded back and slowly got up and began to inch towards the machines. Casually, he picked up a heavy candlestick from the end table. Nikki looked at him, her eyes wide with fright. It's okay, he mouthed silently. Bobby and Marty were so busy eating and ransacking the room they didn't even notice Terry and David on their bikes until the air filled with the sounds of the revving engines. Hey, both Bobby and Marty forgot what they were doing and leapt for their bikes. Leave them alone. But Terry and David were ready for them. Just as the two bikers reached the motorcycles, Terry and David jumped off the seats. Bobby and Marty dived for the two boys but came up with nothing but air. With a bellow of rage, Marty stood up and swung his chain at Terry. Terry caught the end of it with a candlestick. He pulled and Marty cried out in anger and pain as the chain twisted out of his hand. Meanwhile, David and Bobby were fighting, rolling over and over on the floor. Bobby was a dirty fighter and he was half drunk, and David was quicker and fully erect. He had Bobby down and was pounding his face, causing blood to pour over both of them. With another blow, he stunned Bobby, then stood up, satisfied sexually. Marty had forgotten about his chain and advanced on Terry threateningly, wildly swinging his fists at him. Terry kept ducking and moving backward, searching for an opening, a way to stop him. From the corner of his eye, he saw David suddenly mount Marty.
Spike turned it around and gunned it for the front door. He jumped off at the last minute. "Hey, Marty," David called. "Your bike's gone home without you. Ghost ride the whip, bitch." Marty looked around in horror, then turned and ran out after his runaway bike. A second later, there was a sickening crash. "How about we do the same thing to your bike?" Terry said to Bobby, who was just struggling up from the floor. Without a word, Bobby threw a leg over his bike, his face a bloody mess. "Tough guys, huh?" Bobby sneered. He glared at Terry first, then David, with such hatred that Terry felt his stomach turn over. "You dead meat, man. You're history. Both of you." He looked around the room, slowly, menacingly. "Later," he said. With a final, threatening look, he gunned the motorcycle and rode out of the mansion and into the night. When R.L. Stein wrote this, he had to have been thinking that Bobby was going to be played by Corey Feldman in the movie version of this. That kid is so Corey Feldman. He is bafflingly Corey. Which I think was a sitcom on E! For a while. Oh well.
Okay, it's now a Monday evening night. I'm in bed drinking a Bud Light Platinum. Just fully tucked into bed. And I figure that if I can get a chapter or two done right now, I'll feel good about myself and trying to get this horrible, horrible train wreck of a book done. I'm Dune. This is a Monday sometime in late August, early, mid-August, 2013. Franklin's by my side eating a bunch of kibbles and bits. Except for he only eats the and bits, he doesn't eat the kibble, and it's usually mini bits, but they were out of mini bits, so he's just eating the adult dog bits. Like I said, Bud Light Platinum, I have another big chug before I do this. I ate a little Ativan too, but whatever. Chapter 28, Heal the Book. Chapter 28, for you and for me and the entire podcast race. And Scarlet starts me on. The smell of motorcycle exhaust hung in the air. Several kids began congratulating Terry and David on getting rid of those two biker faggots. But their thanks were subdued. Everyone seemed to be in shock. "Nice going," Murphy said. "We did what we had to do," said David, wiping his...
Scarlet, really?
Alright, so the cat is standing next to the two DVD players I've stacked upon one another to get it to connect to a TV with old coax cables, and trying to get into my closet door, which is shut. She's just kind of screaming at it. It's most likely ghosts. I did go to the Whaley house last night. Go Wikipedia that. It's one of the most haunted places in the world, if you believe in that sort of thing. Anyway. We did what we had to do, said David, wiping his bloody face with a tissue. Maybe they'll go pick on someone else for a while. Justine, where's your phone? Said Terry. We've got to report this to the police. What a bitch. Panic and alarm crossed Justine's face. No. No police. I feel the same way. But they broke into your house, said David. They vandalized it, and you heard their threats. That's all they were. Just threats, Justine said. She moved closer to David.
What, Scarlet?
I'm gonna throw a piece of dog food at her. No, pistachio shell. She's very alarmed by the pistachio shell. All right. That's all they were, just fucking threats and shit, Justine said. She moved closer to David, put an arm on his hand, or his hand on his arm, and stared directly into his face. Those boys are just bullies, she said. All swagger and no substance. Like Bieber, am I right? They wouldn't dare come back after the way you and Terry faced them down. Well, I don't know. David said uncertainly. Really, everything's fine now, said Justine. A few of the decorations are ruined, but so fucking what? What's important is that no one was really hurt. Alex? Terry? Are you all right? I'm aight, muttered Alex.
I'm okay,
said Terry. His cheek hurt where Bobby had punched him, and he suspected there would be a big bruise, but no real harm had been done. "Thank you, all of you, for being so brave," Justine said, turning her smile up to the full wattage. A look of mischief crossed her face. What the fuck? I gotta get comfortable. I feel like my breathing's fucking my mind, not the booze and pills. And then she added, "Now, are you brave enough for the next surprise?" "You mean we're just going to keep going as if nothing happened?" said Angela like a total bitch. "Well, I hope so," said Justine. "If we stop now, Bobby and Marty will have won. Besides," she added, her lovely face turning pouty, "I've worked so hard planning everything. We haven't even had half the surprises yet. We also haven't settled things between the jocks and the wimps," added Murphy Carter, attorney at law. It didn't say attorney at law, but I assumed it would be a cool name. "Of course, if you wimps want to concede defeat now..." "No way," said Ricky. "We're just as game as you guys, and for your information, our team has a few more tricks up its sleeve." "Good," said Justine. "Then, it's settled. Why don't you all relax for a while? I'll bring out some more food, and then, in a few minutes, we can start the treasure hunt." She disappeared into the direction of the kitchen. Where she belongs, am I right, fellas? Cause stereotypes? Terry was starting to get his second wind and wondered what Justine's next surprise could be. He sneaked a glance at Alex, who was leaning against the wall beside the fireplace, fully recovered from his injury. Alex caught his eye and shrugged. Then he mouthed one word. "Jabroni." No, it's wimp. He mouthed wimp. Terry knew he had to stay on his toes. Alex was still into this dumb contest. That mean Terry had to be too. No way Alex was going to win, after everything that had happened. Did you guys notice when I said, "That mean Terry had to be too," rather than "that meant"? Well, now I pointed it out, but do you guys notice when I do things like that? I bet you do. Justine and Philip brought out trays with hot apple cider and cookies, and soon everyone was relaxed and in a party mood again. The tape machine was playing golden oldies from the 50s, and Trisha and Ricky began to dance to "At the Hop." Trisha was smiling and seemed happy again. "I love these old songs," Angela said, clapping in time to the music. She leaned back against a corner of the stone fireplace, then gave a little shriek as it shifted and opened. Where the solid stones had been was a human skeleton, its hollow face grinning mindlessly. There were several screams and then the sound of laughter as everyone realized it was another surprise. These kids, huh? "I see you've discovered one of our trap doors," Justine said with a stupid cunt smile. "One of them," said Angela. "You mean there's more?" "Remember," said Justine, "I promised a lot of surprises." "Sweet," said Angela. Stupid pages. Franklin, turn the page for me. Franklin, keep Daddy away from the Bud Light Platinum. Oh, no, you failed. "How are you doing, funny face?" Terry turned to Nikki, who was leaning against the cushions on the sofa beside him, sipping cider. "Okay," she said. "How are you?" She gently touched his cheek where Bobby had hit him. "I'm okay," he said. "I just hope Bobby and Marty don't." "He was cut off by a surprise shriek." "What is that?" protested Angela, her face twisted in disgust like a retarded person. "Human brain," said Ricky. He was standing in front of her, innocently holding a dark metal box. "Get real," said Alex. "Where would you get a human brain?" From my uncle, said Ricky, still as innocent. He runs a medical supply house. He let me borrow it for the party. Angela looked as if she was going to be sick, like she was after every single meal, just so any boy would pay attention to her. Let me see that, Murphy said. I can't take it out, we'd ruin it, said Ricky, holding the box tighter. Of course, if you want to touch it. Alex defiantly thrust his hand into the box, then, just as quickly, pulled it out with a strangled cry. Sorta slimy, isn't it? Said Ricky smugly. Anyone else want to try? Sure, said David. He walked up to Ricky, pretended to put his hand in the box, but grabbed it instead and turned it upside down. The contents slithered out, landing on the stone hearth with a sickening plop. Some brains, said David. Looks like cold spaghetti to me. Gotcha! No, I gotcha first, said Ricky. Angela and Alex both thought it was brains. No, we didn't, protested Alex. We were just putting you on. This is one for the jock team. The argument about whose gotcha it was stopped when Justine rang a little bell.
I got a little bell by me. Franklin, stay there. I'm going to get my bell. Come on. Come on. Damn it. Oh, I ruined everything. I do have a bell. Sweet. Wow. There's like 15 empty beer fucking cans next to my bed. Oh, I do have a bell. This is so not worth it. Nothing has ever been worth it.
I've ever done this podcast. Watch. Let's do it again, though. It's going to be sweet, huh? I don't know where I was in the book. I don't know what page I was on. This is an abortion. Okay, the argument about whose gotcha it was stopped when Justine rang a little bell. I did it. Oh, my God, it was worth it. Never mind. I disregard everything. I have a bell next to me that I got at the swap meet while drunk. That's a bell and a bottle opener, so I can be like, Connie, give me another beer, baby. And she'll be like, okay, are you sure you hadn't had enough? And I'll be like, I'll tell you when I had enough. Now give it to me. And then I can open it with the top. And then she'll cry in the bathroom for hours. You know, about me and my me be just a horrible person. I'll be like, God damn it, woman. I need respect. I read audiobooks illegally. I don't give a shit. What the fuck? This is the worst one ever. May I have your attention? She was standing in front of the fire, and outlined in light, it was almost possible to believe that she was a vampire. To one side of the fireplace, her uncle Philip sat slouched on a stool, the artificial tear sparkling on his sad clown's face. Is everyone back in the groove, ready to party? Justine asked. Without waiting for an answer, she went on. It's time for my next surprise. This one is a treasure hunt, but it's not like any treasure hunt you've ever had. A treasure hunt? Exclaimed Trisha. What fun! Get real, said Murphy. Treasure hunts are for little kids. And wimps. Justine, still smiling, turned to Murphy. You might not think so when you see the list of items, she said teasingly. But of course, no one has to participate. In fact, it could be a little dangerous. The treasure hunt is only for those who are really brave. Hey, I never said I wouldn't participate, said Murphy. Good, said Justine, her cat green eyes sparkling with excitement. She began passing out photocopied lists. This is a list of the items Uncle Philip and I have hidden around the mansion. She moved on. There are treasures in every room, on both floors, and in the attic, and the basement. Whichever team finds the most treasures by midnight will win a special prize. A sex prize. Everyone grabbed the lists and prepared to rush off, but Justine's voice stopped them. One more thing, she added. Please, be careful. After all, anything can happen on Halloween. Halloween. Halloween.
Halloween, Halloween. Speaking of retarded people, Trisha found the first treasure before anyone had even left the living room. While Justine was still explaining the rules, Trisha carefully removed the food still sitting on the casket and opened it to reveal a bundle of bones wrapped in tattered blue cloth. The hand bones of a mummy. "I've got a treasure," she cried. "But Justine, is this really from a mummy?" "Supposedly," said Justine. "We picked it up in Egypt." Ooh. Hey, listeners, if you've never heard of Egypt, why don't you check out a really old episode of Dune Reads Goosebumps where it was called Return of the Living Mummy. You know, I read that one. I made a bunch of fleshlight jokes. "This is great, isn't it?" said David, laughing as he and Terry simultaneously walked into the pantry from the opposite doors. "I can't believe all this weird stuff Justine and her uncle have," Terry said. He showed David the only treasure he'd found so far, a hairy tarantula preserved in glass paperweight. "I found this in the toilet tank." "Yeah, more like you found that in fucking Tijuana." "I found my treasure in a terrarium," David said, showing Terry a stuffed cobra. "At first I thought it was alive because it was moving around, but then I saw it was attached to an electric motor." Wait, the house is weird, a bunch of creepy shit happens, they're not into cops, there's a moving cobra and you still touch it, I don't like that shit one bit. Fucking animatronics. "I'm not even sure I want to find some of this stuff," Terry said, scanning his list. "A bottle of blood?" "Murphy already found that," David said. "He was prowling around in the front hall and tripped over a loose floorboard. The bottle was right under it." "Catch you later," Terry said. David was a good guy, he realized. Too bad the other jocks weren't more like him. The thought of the jocks made him think of Alex, which made him think of Nikki, and he wondered where she was in the big, spooky house. Maybe he'd run into her. Ooh, there's one of those pause drinking breaks in this. I like if I added production value to this by just having one guy that stood next to me and rang the little bell every time people should drink. Oh, and if you're listening to this and you're under 21, just drink anyway. I drank all the time before I was 21. It was rad as hell. Being drunk's awesome. I do it every day. Oh, man, you guys should do it constantly. It's fucking cool as hell. Seriously, if you're not 21, you gotta find a way to get booze because it is awesome. Nikki looked at the list half-heartedly. Even though it was the greatest party she'd ever been to, she wasn't that interested in fun and games. The party still seemed like a mystery to her. Nothing. Oh, it's nothing. I was about to complain about the typo, but no, it's nothing added up. The treasure hunt, she decided, was the perfect chance to explore the mansion freely. She replayed in her mind the conversation she had lip-read when Justine was in the phone booth, and had decided that it didn't have anything to do with the party. After all, Justine seemed only to care about her guests having a good time, and despite her weird uncle, she was really sweet. But there was still something intriguing about her, about Nikki. Oh, wait, sorry. Fuck, I need to... All right. I'm gonna finish this beer. In the words of the late Kid Rock, "I'm going platinum!" But there was still something intriguing about her. And Nikki was determined to find out what it was. She would have felt a little guilty about searching the house, but the treasure hunt gave her the perfect excuse. It wasn't even snooping. Not really. She was working her way through the rooms on the top floor. So far, none of them contained anything of interest to her. She entered a large bedroom at the back of the house and switched on the light. She jumped back. Her heart pounded as a huge, glowing head dropped in front of her. After a second, she realized it was just another one of Justine's surprises. She switched the light off again, and the head was pulled back up to the ceiling on an automatic reel. After a little searching, she found a lamp and clicked it on, then smiled in satisfaction.
From the perfume bottles and cosmetics and the antique vanity and the beautiful ruffled pink satin bedspread, she realized she must be in Justine's room. Satin's a weird word because that's what young people think is the spelling of Satan. They're like, I love satin. I don't know. I just remember driving past a place all the time in my mom's car being like, man, they just can write satin on the wall. But I was referring to Satan. Now I'm drinking a Coaguama Cerveza Especial. Importada. Hello, Muerta. Hello, Fuerta. I'm Importada. From Guatemala. God, I'm great. You can tell a lot about a person by examining their vagina. Their bedroom, Nikki thought. For example, take her own bedroom. Her sewing stuff and the fashion cutouts on the bulletin board showed her interest in fashion design. Her collection of stuffed dogs showed that she loved animals and hoped someday to raise them. And her rock posters showed just the sort of music she preferred. My bedroom, by the way, has nothing in it. My house is very interesting. There's a whole bunch of vintage Star Wars toys. There's cool balls posters. There's lots of alcohol-related stuff and tiki stuff. But my bedroom sucks. My bedroom is... My nightstand has about 15 bottles of beer, a Star Trek toy that my girlfriend got me for my birthday, a thing of water, some cups, and then a crowbar next to me, like I'm going to protect myself because I'm a half fag who couldn't do anything. And then my girlfriend's side of the bed has a little thing of candy from last night when we went to the candy shop in Old Town San Diego. Water cups, no booze at all. A Dalek, a TARDIS, other Doctor Who stuff. A little planetarium thing of the Death Star that projects a galaxy. And then a TV, a dresser, and no decorations whatsoever. Oh, and then my natural light, like a pull thing that they'd have a liquor store, but it's for natural light beer. But I always find it funny because it used to only be the only light in here, and it was ironically called natural light because it's not natural light, you know. It's only isn't natural light, but it's natural light. It's fucking good stuff. But she realized, standing in the middle of Justine's room, this room didn't say much about Justine at all. Just like Dune's room, there were no stuffed animals, no pictures of movie actors or rock stars, no hint of a hobby, nothing personal at all, except for a picture of a smiling man and woman from the 50s in an ornate frame in the vanity. Justine's school books were stacked on top of the radiator, but there was nothing in the room that could be used as a desk. Strange, Nikki thought. Justine must not take school very seriously. But then she reminded herself, after all the places she's lived, Shadyside must be like a small potatoes. Because it sucks. Where they live sucks. She opened each of the drawers in the chest, but there wasn't much in them aside from a few folded pairs of underpants. Gross! Ugh, they're probably covered in fluids. And some sweaters. Her curiosity piqued even more by what she hadn't found. Nikki opened the closet door and was shocked to find it almost empty except for the school clothes she'd seen Justine in. Where were her jeans? Her sweatshirts? Her sneakers? What did she wear after school? Didn't she have any party dresses? She took her flashlight, shone around the closet, then saw a faint, square-shaped crack in the back. She remembered the trap door in the fireplace and wondered if this were another one. Excited, she stepped to the back of the closet and began to press around the crack with her fingertips. Nothing happened. Frowning, Nikki stared at the door, then began to feel around the empty closet shelves. Her finger touched a small knob and she turned it. The back of the closet swung open, revealing another, larger closet. Hey, motherfucker, you're so gay that you're in a closet that's inside of a closet and you need a special key to get out of that motherfucking closet because you're so gay. You know what I'm saying? Reference Fear Street Halloween Party, page 69, dude! And then you'll understand the joke about how gay you are. Nikki gasped in surprise. This hidden closet was jammed with clothing, but clothing very different from everyday clothes she had seen. At first, she thought they were very old clothes left by the people who had lived in the Cameron Mansion before, but when she took a few off the hangers, she saw that they were new, many of them with labels from expensive designers and famous department stores in New York, San Francisco, Mission Valley, and Paris. There were beautiful woolen suits, shiny satin, cocktail dresses. Sorry, like I said before, satin and Satan are the same word because I'm a child, and it just said, shiny Satan cock. But then it goes dash, and cocktail finishes the next one, but shiny Satan cock. Shiny satin cocktail dresses, colorful skirts and jackets, and sophisticated styles that no one she knew would wear. A chrome rack on the floor held dozens of beautiful high shoes in every type of leather and every color in the rainbow. Wow! The back of the closet revealed three beautiful full-length gowns and two fur coats. One mink, one fox. Nikki couldn't believe her fucking stupid eyes. This was the most beautiful wardrobe she had ever seen. Were all of these clothes Justine's? But when would she wear them, and why were they hidden away like this? Maybe, she decided, they were Justine's mother's clothes. But nobody really knew if Justine had a mother or not. Maybe there was another older woman who lived here. Philip's girlfriend, or his wife, or just his main bitch. But in that case, why did Justine have so few clothes of her own? It's a real mystery, Nikki thought. She loved mysteries. All the ladies love mysteries. That's why he works so well on MTV's The Pickup Artist. A small bureau stood against one side of the closet, and Nikki opened its drawers to reveal pastel negligees, nightgowns, and silk underwear. In the bottom drawer was a carefully packaged package. It says carefully wrapped package, but fuck it, it's the same thing. She opened it, not even considering that someone might catch her snooping, and was shocked to see a framed fucking photo of Justine and a man with her arms around each other, gazing lovingly into each other's eyes, but the man was much older, from the streaks of gray in his hair, at least 40. Was Justine having an affair with an older man? Was that why she never went out with the boys from school, or never went to any of the games? Nikki carefully put everything back, just the way she had found it, then closed the secret door. She was about to leave Justine's room when her eyes caught the bathroom door. She went in, and shit. Just kidding, she went in and, with a small pang of conscience, opened the medicine cabinet. Ooh, that's what Dune would do first, too. It was filled with typical medicine cabinet things. Toothpaste, mouthwash, several bottles of nail polish and other cosmetics, amyl nitrates, aspirin, Rohypnol, and a box of Band-Aids. There were three prescription bottles on top shelf. Nikki took them down one by one. She didn't recognize the names of any of the medications except for a sleeping pill her mother sometimes used. But all three prescriptions were made out to Enid Cameron. Enid? Nikki thought. Who the fuck is Enid? Philip's wife? But no matter how many explanations she considered, the one that she kept popping into her fucking stupid head was that Justine was somehow leading a double life. During the day, she went to school like any other teenager, but at night and on weekends, she had a whole other life, but no one else knew about it. But why? Why keep it all such a secret? Maybe, Nikki thought, she was just letting her imagination run away from her. Maybe there was a logical explanation for everything she had seen. She needed to talk to Terry. She realized if anyone could figure this puzzle out, it was him. Now, all she had to do was find him somewhere in the mansion. Beer time. Terry was really enjoying the treasure hunt. By the way, this is all one chapter. Fucking A. So far, in addition to the tarantula, he'd found three of the items on the list. A polished monkey skull. I was polishing the old monkey skull earlier the day. That had been hidden inside a laundry hamper. A crystal ball. And his latest acquisition, an ivory pendant in the shape of a dagger. He found the pendant while he had opened a cupboard and was scared out of his wits by what appeared to be a bloody, disembodied head, but turned out, on closer inspection, to be the head of a mannequin covered in catsup. Ugh. I'm judging R.L. Stine right now for choosing to just randomly write catsup instead of ketchup. After he had gotten over his fright, Terry found the pendant around the mannequin's neck. He laughed and added it to the rest of his loot. He heard a couple of other treasure hunters coming his way. Then he remembered that Justine had said her Uncle Phil's preparing some surprises in the attic. He searched and found a narrow staircase leading upstairs, mounting the dark, creaky stairs to the attic. His heart thudded with anticipation and a little thrill of fear. What treasures would he find up there? What scares? This was definitely the best party he'd ever been to, because he was yet to discover drugs. The attic was small and dusty and filled with old boxes and trunks. Terry realized from the thick layer of dust on the boxes and trunks that they had been sealed up long ago. He switched on the overhead light and spotted a closet door, a perfect place to hide items on the list, he thought. Grinning to himself, Terry pulled open the door and then stopped and stared in shock. No! Oh, please, no! The room went white. Terry's breath caught in his throat. He gripped the closet door to hold himself up and stared into the shadowy cubicle. Alex? Alex? He cried. Hanging from the rope was the limp body of the Silver Prince, his neck bent in an impossible angle. Sticky red blood was spattered over the front of his beautiful costume. It puddled onto the closet floor. Drip. Drip. Drip.
Oh my god, fuck Fear Street. It's now a Wednesday. Fucking drinking Steel Reserve. I think I'm just going to keep randomly recording a chapter whenever I can, because this is fucking not going well. Fuck, I'm not singing. No, I'll sing. You gotta sing. Franklin, you gotta let the song out of your heart. That's what'll cheer me up. Chapter, it's chapter number 9. It's another trick, Terry told himself. Please, oh please, let it be another trick. But the silver costume was real, and the blood continued to drip as he watched. Drip, 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 just like the end of an infected cock. A steady rhythm he knew he'd remember for the rest of his life. He was still staring at the bent form of his friend, trying to get the strength to go for someone, when he heard a voice behind him. What you got? Oh, no! It was David, horror on his face. Later, when he joined the army, he would pay a lot of money to have a horror on his face. I just found him, Terry said, his voice and hand shaking. Maybe it's another trick. I don't think so, said David. Don't touch him. I'll go for help. I'm coming with you. Terry didn't want to spend another second with Alex's corpse. On the way down the stairs, they ran into Ricky, Trisha, and Les. Quickly, David told them what Terry had found. Ooh, I got a text. Fuck, I need to read it. Okay. We've got to call an ambulance, said Trisha. Maybe he's only hurt. It's more than that, said David. You didn't see him, his neck, all the blood. Terry shuddered, remembering the ruined costume. He had had his problems with Alex, sure, but no one deserved to have something so terrible happen to them. What about rapists? At least call the police, said Les. First, let's tell Justine and her uncle what happened, said David. They'll know what to do. Justine and her uncle were sitting in front of the fireplace, talking together in low tones. And Scarlett's hopping up to go play with the microphone. When the frightened guests burst into the living room and explained what had happened, Justine jumped up at once, concern radiating from her lovely face. "You call the police," Philip told Justine. "I'll see what the situation is." "Wait, Uncle Phil," said Justine. "No police." "Yet." Philip nodded, and together with the others, they ran up the two flights of stairs to the attic. "It's in here," said Terry, choking on malt liquor. Leading the others to the closet, he braced himself for what he knew he was going to see and pulled open the door. There was nothing at all inside the closet. "I don't believe this shit," he cried. "Where is he?" asked David at the same moment. "Very funny," said Trisha angrily. "For your information, Terry, you're not supposed to pull tricks on members of your own team." And by that I mean homosexuals. "It's not a trick," Terry protested. "I saw him. We both did. He was here," David added. "And blood was dripping. He bent down and touched the closet floor. It's dry," he said, sounding astonished. "I guess I'm not the only one who prepares surprises," said Justine with a little smile. "Come on, Uncle Phil. Let's head downstairs." That's where I'm stopping. I'm marking the book with a Sharpie because I gotta check the text I'm getting. The others were about to follow them when Nikki came into the room. "Has anyone seen Terry?" she asked. Then she spotted him. "What's going on here? What are all you doing in here?" Quickly, the others explained what had happened. "So we get up here," Les finished, "and there's not only no body, the closet's completely empty. Obviously, they made the whole thing up." "Did you make it up?" Nikki asked Terry, her dark eyes searching for his face. "No," Terry repeated. "I saw the body. It was real. Rigor mortis had already set in. I had seen the boner. He was rock hard. It was so hot." "I don't know where it is now, but it's not here." "Come to think of it," said Ricky, starting to sound worried, "I haven't seen Alex for quite a while now. Has anyone?" "Maybe you just thought you saw something," said Nikki. "There are a lot of shadows in here." And by that, she did not mean African Americans. "What we saw was real," said David. "It was Alex." "Then if he was, like you say, we've got to find him," said Nikki. "Come on, Terry. Let's look in the rest of the rooms." No one felt like searching alone, so the six of them, Terry, Nikki, Les, David, Ricky, and Trisha, carefully checked behind the boxes in the attic, then crept down the stairs and began to go through the rooms on the second floor. "This is Justine's room," said Nikki, opening the door. "Maybe he just..." She broke off with a shriek. The others crowded closer. Lying on Justine's bed was the Silver Prince. Who the fuck's the Silver Prince? But as soon as they got near, it became clear it wasn't Alex. Ricky approached the bed first. "Hey," she said, "that's just a dummy," Terry finished for him. The object laying on the bed was Alex's silver costume, stuffed full of rags. The blood Terry and David had seen was streamers of red cellophane that had moved slightly to resemble dripping. In the light, it was hard for Terry to believe he had fooled anyone so badly. They shouldn't use names in books that could be male or female. Or name your kids. What kind of fag shit's that? That's what my shirts are going to say. Dude reads Goosebumps. What kind of fag shit's that? It had been so real that he even imagined the sound of blood dripping on the floor. What an idiot he had been. Gotcha. Alex jumped out of the bathroom dressed in a blue robe. Maybe a TARDIS robe that he paid way too much for on ThinkGeek. Laughing so hard he could hardly breathe. "Are you all right?" Nikki asked, wide-eyed, unlike an Asian. "He's fine," said Terry in disgust. His voice was shaking again, but not from fear, from anger. "That was a rotten trick," he told Alex. "We thought something had really happened to you." "I'm touched by your concern," said Alex with a pleased smirk. "Nice work, David." It did look pretty real," David said, also smirking. "You mean you were in on it?" Terry asked David, furious. "Sure he was," said Alex. "How else could we convince you wimps to waste all that time searching for my body while you were running around trying to find the Silver Prince? The rest of the jock team finished the treasure hunt. Too bad, guys. You lose. again. Just like you lose sexually. Because you... The cat is looking at me in the eyes. Like, what the fuck are you doing? She's also upside down on her back. I'm going to take a picture. Can I change the show picture to that? Here we go. Let's see if she moves. Scarlet. Scarlet. Oh, my goodness. All right. I'm obviously not going to post that as a show picture. But it would be funny if... If someone wants to see that, hit me up on Facebook. You'll see it. On the old Facebook.com/DuneReadsGoosebumps. Nikki turned to Alex, angry now herself. That was really mean, Alex, she said. I never thought you could do something so rotten. For a moment, Alex looked hurt, then he smirked again. Hey, he said, don't you know all's fair in love and Halloween tricks? Besides, Nikki, he added, I gave you plenty of chances to join the winning team. Come on, Terry, said Nikki, grabbing his hand, wishing that he could come on, Nikki. Let's go back to the party. Why don't you all clear out, said Alex. I've got to change back into my costume so my team can collect the prize for the treasure hunt. As they walked back down to the living room, Terry's head was swimming. He liked surprises, but Alex's little trick had left him shaken. I guess I still care about Alex, Terry thought. Otherwise, I would have been able to think more clearly when I discovered that dummy in his costume hanging in the closet. In the living room, Murphy and Angela were dancing in the light that was given off by the electric candles. It wasn't very bright. It was moving around and shit. That's what they were hanging out in, or whatever. I don't give a shit. The treasures were piled up on the table by the fireplace. Want some punch? Terry asked Nikki. Sounds great, she said, as she was quickly punched in the face. Hurts donut, cunt. That's not what she said. I'll save you a seat. I need to talk to you. Terry brought two cups of punch and then settled in the love seat next to Nikki. She was every bit as beautiful as she had been at the beginning of the evening, but her dark eyes were now narrowed with concern. Still upset about what Alex did? Terry asked her. Not really, said Nikki. It's something else. Remember when I told you what I saw Justine saying the other day? Terry stopped her in surprise. You don't think she's still up to something, he said. Justine's the only person at the party who hasn't done anything weird. Let me tell you what I found, Nikki went on, and tell me what you think. While you were in the treasure hunt, I went in Justine's room. You were snooping in her room? She didn't say any part of the house was off limits, Nikki reminded him. Besides, I was curious. Terry, she doesn't have any normal high school stuff in her room. Well, why should she? Said Terry. She only moved here a few months ago. Besides, she's lived all over the world. Nah, nah, nah. And she's been player-hated. She's probably more interested in stuff she got in her travels than pennants or school colors. She doesn't have things from her travels, either, said Nikki. Her room is practically bare. Like my vagina. Except for one thing. She told Terry about the hidden closet and the clothes she'd found in there, along with a picture of Justine and the older man. Right, said Terry. Well, there's a simple explanation. Justine's a CIA agent, and the guy's a Russian spy. Will you be serious? Said Nikki, but she was laughing too. Look, I know it sounds crazy, but nothing I found in Justine's room makes any sense. And I also found some prescription bottles made out to Enid Cameron. That's her CIA name, said Terry, and that's why she's having the party. She's going to ask everyone on the guest list to be a spy. Maybe you're not far off, said Nikki. Terry, I really think Justine leads some kind of double life. Well, maybe she does, said Terry. But so fucking what? If you're really that bugged about it, ask that bitch. She's a really nice girl. I'm sure she
Malt liquor.
And I'm sure she wouldn't want anybody to be suspicious of... He broke off as Justine rang her bell again. The dinging came from overhead. And all eyes turned to see Justine standing at the railing of the balcony above the living room, a gold foiled covered box on the table next to her. It's time to award the prize for the treasure hunt, she said. And I'm so happy it was such a success, even if... She paused and smiled mischievously. There was a surprise or two even I hadn't planned on. Most of the kids applauded and cheered, and Justine made a small bow. The prize is special chocolates from Paris. That's P-A-R-I-S, not P-E-R-R-I-S, Paris, California. Which I would call the meth capital, but everyone calls every place the meth capital. People need to decide on what the meth capital is, because everyone claims it's some town that they know that's near them and this and that. And wherever it is, that's where I'm vacationing from now on, she said. Who would like to accept them for the winning team? I will, said Alex. He was back in costume and handsome as ever as he slowly walked up the stairs to meet Justine. Perfect, she said breathlessly. Gold and chocolates for a silver prince. She bent down to pick up the gold box, then staggered slightly and caught herself against the banister. Before she could hand the chocolates to Alex, the railing suddenly gave way. With a blood-curdling scream, Justine fell forward and plunged to the floor below.
Chapter number 10.
She fell so fast no one could move. Her scream echoed off the high ceiling. She landed hard on one of the dark, crushed velvet sofas beneath the balcony and didn't move. Terry and the others ran to the sofa, too scared to speak. Justine lay across the sofa, her eyes closed, her arm hooked crookedly over the sofa back. Alex... That's how they pronounce Alex in space. Alex reached her before anyone else. Justine! He cried. Her eyes opened and she slowly sat up. What happened? She murmured, dazed. Terry realized he'd been holding his breath. What could possibly happen next? He wondered. You fell, Alex told Justine gently. Are you all right? I think so, said Justine. But how? The banister, it just gave way, Alex said. But how could it, said Justine. It's solid. We had all the woodwork checked when we moved in here. She leaned against the cushion and gave a little gasp of pain. My wrist, she said. It may be sprained, said Alex, taking it in his hands. Do you have an elastic bandage? They mean an ace bandage, but that's a brand name, so they can't use it. While Trisha and Angela went for the bandage, the other kids started to climb the stairs to inspect the place where the banister had broken. But Philip was already up there, and despite his sad clown's mask, he looked furious. All right, he said in a stronger voice than Terry had heard him use all evening. It stopped everyone cold. Which one of you motherfuckers did this? Did what? Asked Murphy. The banister just... It was sawed, said Philip. He held up one end of the broken railing and everyone could see that it had clearly been cut through. The jocks did it, Ricky blurted out, backing down the stairs with everyone else. We heard some of their tricks were going to be dangerous. We didn't do shit, snarled Murphy. Admit it, it was you guys, because you can't stand to lose. Are you fucking crazy? Protested Les. Why would we do such a stupid thing? In fact, why would anyone? I can think of a reason, said Alex, his face grim. Oh, yeah, said Les. What? To make our team look bad, he said, staring directly at Terry. Are you accusing me of something? Terry asked. If so, say it. I'm not accusing anyone of anything, said Alex. I just think that it's funny that right after your team loses the treasure hunt, something bad happens. That's bullshit, said Terry. When would we have time to and privacy to do it? You're probably just covering up for doing it yourself. Isn't it enough that you had to cheat to win the treasure hunt? Do you want to kill someone, too? Alex came down the last two stairs, fast, breathing hard. If you were an old friend, he said, I'd, yeah, said Terry, angry at himself for letting his dispute happen, but unable to back down, you'd what? Nothing, muttered Alex, deciding he'd be the one to let things chill out. Stop it! Can't you two stop it? Nikki was standing between them, shouting at both of them. Something terrible has happened, and all you can do is fight about it. She turned to Philip. Mr. Cameron, she said. We all feel terrible about this, but I'm sure no one here could have done such a terrible thing.
Someone cut the banister, said Philip, downstairs now, sitting beside his niece, and nearly killed my niece. Now, Uncle Philip, Justine said, placatingly, whoever it was couldn't have known I'd be the one to lean on the railing. She put an arm around her uncle's shoulders. I just feel so bad that it had spoiled the party. All I ever wanted was for everyone to have a good time. Philip stood and stepped away, shaking his stupid head. Hey, no problem. Alex was at the other side of the couch, slipping his arm around her. Nothing spoiled. It's a great party. Honest, chimed in Angela. Oh, wait, sorry. Honest, chimed in Angela, wrapping Justine's wrist. None of the things that have gone wrong are your fault. We're all having a really good time. Really? Justine asked in a tiny voice. Thank you for saying so. Now everyone else crowded around Justine, telling her what a great party it was. Justine turned her smile back on in full force. Thank you all so much, she said. Maybe we just need a few minutes to catch our breath and relax, and then we'll get on with the party. After all, there's still plenty more surprises. She paused and stood up, then glanced around. I'm going upstairs for a few minutes to get myself together. I'll see you guys soon. Whatever you say, Alex said. He had rested one hand lightly on the back of her neck and was looking at her as if no one else in the room existed. Justine whispered something in Alex's ear. Alex laughed and whispered something back. Then Justine headed upstairs. How can Justine be with Alex? Terry wondered. Alex was probably the one who cut the banister, or at least knows who did. Those two are headed for nothing but trouble, Nikki suddenly said. He saw that she, too, was watching Alex and Justine. I know what you mean, he agreed. Someone ought to warn her. Warn her? Nikki's eyes flashed. Someone ought to warn him. You may think I'm wrong, but I just don't trust that bitch.
Oh, surprise, surprise. Scarlet, a teenage girl doesn't trust another teenage girl. Wow. Well, that's a new concept, huh? Let's read on. All right, Kat.
You just have some kind of silly hunch, that's all, Terry said, surprised at how much he felt like he's defending Justine. You know what, Nikki? You're acting like you're... He stopped himself before he said something he'd regret.
I'm acting like I'm what?
Nikki put a hand on Terry's cheek and pulled his face towards her. Her eyes were blazing with anger and something else. Like you're, well, jealous, Terry let out. Now that Alex is paying more attention to Justine than you, you seem to think Justine is the Wicked Witch of the West. For a moment, Nikki didn't answer. Her face had gotten very pale. Is that what you really think? She said at last. Look, I know you don't really care about Alex, said Terry, but how come you're so down on Justine all of a sudden? In the first place, I do care about Alex, Justine said, as a friend, and I don't want to see him get hurt. In the second place, there's something about Justine that just isn't right. And if she didn't have you on her string, you'd see it yourself. Some very strange things have been happening.
All right, said Terry, strung.
And I suppose you think Justine cut through the banister herself?
I didn't say that, said Nikki.
I don't know who cut through it, but that doesn't change the fact that Justine is playing some kind of game with all of us. Especially Alex.
Especially Alex.
So now you're going to protect Alex? Terry couldn't help saying it, even though he knew it would make things worse. What am I going to do? Said Nikki, her voice cold with anger. What I'm going to do is find out what's going on, while there's still time. She turned abruptly and walked away. Terry watched her go, looking at her fine ass. Ooh. Justine had a widescreen TV set up and Bride of Frankenstein was on. Terry had never seen it, so he watched it for a while. He was actually getting caught up in it when a deafening thunderclap rattled in the house. A moment later, the screen went black, and all the lights went out. In Georgia. Just kidding, just in the house. Or, you know, it could be the old neighborhood, but they didn't reference that.
It's now a Thursday, and guess what, you assholes? I'm finally gonna get this shit up tonight! All right, Dune reads Goosebumps. I'm Dune! Chapter 11. A few kids gasped. Terry heard nervous laughter. The glow from the fireplace provided the only light. The flickering flames sent eerie shadows playing across the walls. Justine's voice cut through the darkness. You probably wonder if this is another of my surprises, she said with a little laugh. But this surprise thunderstorm was provided by Mother Nature. And the dark is just perfect for the next game, if you're brave enough to play. Ooh, it's probably going to be spin the bottle. Uh-oh, someone's going to get finger blasted. Let's party! Yelled Ricky with a hyphen in between the words. I wasn't just saying it like a douche. Sit down, Shore, someone yelled. Terry squinted at his watch in the firelight and saw that it read 3 o'clock. There had been so much excitement, the time had gone quickly. He was surprised to realize that in just a few hours, the party would be over. He tried to see where Nikki was. He knew she was somewhere in the shadows, but decided not to push it. She'd come back when she got over being mad. Women. Justine had begun to describe the new game, which she called Truth. The idea is that you tell everyone the worst thing you've ever done, she explained. Then everyone votes on whether you told the truth or not. If they think you are lying, you have to pay a penalty. This is fucked up and manipulative. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard, protested Murphy and somewhat Dune. Do you believe you're afraid to tell the truth in front of... do you mean you're afraid to tell the truth in front of your friends? Justine said. No way. I just think it's kind of dumb. Like you, he said, backing down. But I'm not afraid. Good, said Justine before he could go on. You see, the whole point of the game is for us to get really to know... Alright, vodka, save me. I don't think you're supposed to chug vodka. Do you mean you're afraid to tell the truth in front of your friends? Justine said. No way. I just think it's kind of dumb, he said, backing down. I'm not afraid. Good, said Justine before he could go on. You see, the whole point of the game is for us to really get to know each other. Now, who would like to go first? No one volunteered. Finally, Justine turned her smile on Ricky. How do you know it's smiling? It's in the dark, R.L. Stine. Huge plot hole. I'm going to write a letter. Ricky, what about you? She said. Tell us what's the worst thing you ever did. Ricky stood in front of the fireplace, obviously nervous and embarrassed. I can't really talk about it, Ricky said uncomfortably. Hey, sure, that's not like you, someone yelled. Since when won't you talk about yourself? Oh my god, he's a regular Toby Keith, huh? Everyone laughed. Everyone but Ricky. Something really bad happened once, Ricky said, muttering to the floor. On Fear Island, during an overnight with some kids, we thought someone was dead, and... He stopped. I really can't talk about it. Heavy, someone shouted. Someone else booed, unhappy that he wasn't going to hear the whole story. You have to be penalized for not telling the story, Justine said. Your penalty is to stand on 1 foot until I can say stop and stuff. Also, I'm going to fuck you with a strap on. On 1 foot and with a strap on, protested Ricky. I can never keep up my balance. Then it's a perfect penalty, said Justine with alliteration. Okay, who's next? How about you, Angela? The worst thing I ever did? Said Angela, standing and smiling. That's easy. I stole my sister's boyfriend last summer. I called him up pretending I was her and going to meet him. I let him know how much I liked him and how I was sorry later, though. How much I liked him. I was sorry later, though, she added. He turned out to be a real loser. Once he got me pregnant, never called again.
Everyone laughed and applauded. When Angela sat down, Murphy got up and started telling something about cheating on a math test so he could keep his sports eligibility. Terry thought the game was really stupid, and even a little cruel. He was sure Nikki hated it, too. Maybe the two of them could go off together and just talk. He looked around, trying to spot her, and suddenly he realized she wasn't anywhere in the living room. Puzzled, he got up and checked in the hall and the kitchen, but there's no sign of that bitch Nikki. With a sinking feeling, he remembered that she had said she was going to find out what was going on. When he returned to the living room, Ricky was still standing on one foot. "Can I stop now?" he begged Justine. Yeah, because he's into femdom. "If you're willing to tell us the truth about the worst thing you've ever done," she said. "But I told the truth. It's just other kids were involved. It wouldn't be right for me to tell the story. And believe me, it's a real downer." It would bring everyone down. He looked very uncomfortable, and Terry felt sorry for him. All right, sit down, asshole," said Justine. Her fingers were intertwined with Alex's, and she leaned her head against his chest for a moment. "Who's next?" she said. "How about you?" said Ricky. "Oh, no," Justine replied with her mischievous smile. "I'm the hostess, so I get to go last. How about Terry?" she said, spotting him. Not right now," said Terry. I'm looking for Nikki. Has anyone seen her?" "Not lately," said Trisha. "But it's so dark in here." "Luckily, we're all white, you know, because then you'd have to smile to see the other people if they're African. I didn't say this. Not me, Dune. This is what Trisha was. Never mind. Maybe she's hiding," said Murphy. "Come to think of it," said Alex, "I haven't seen Les for a while either. Maybe she decided to switch wimps." "Or maybe you know where she is," said Terry. "Give me a break," said Alex. "If you can't keep track of your own girlfriend, it's not my fault." Terry had an angry reply ready, but before he could say anything, Justine stood up. "Will you two shut the fuck up?" she said. "You're spoiling the game." Alex continued to glare at Terry. Terry glared back. Ooh, that's why they call him Stary Terry! I just made that up, but it's funny, huh? Then shrugged. "I'm gonna find Nikki," he announced, to no one in particular. He took a flashlight from the mantle and began to climb the stairs. It was still raining hard, but he could hear Alex and Murphy laughing in the living room. "Looks like Terry's going on his own treasure hunt," said Murphy. "Maybe he just can't face the truth," added Alex. One by one...
Please tell me it's recording.
Oh, hell we, it is. One by one, Terry examined the rooms on the second floor. By the time he'd gotten to the last one, Justine's bedroom, he was beginning to feel a little nervous. Had he somehow missed Nikki? Could she have, I don't know, decided to go home? He stood in the hall a moment, shining the flashlight its full length. At the far end, rain splattered against the window, causing the glass to rattle and shake. Outside, flashes of lightning illuminated the whipping trees.
Ooh, good description, R.L. Stein.
For a moment, he thought he had heard the roar of motorcycles and froze, but then realized it was just thunder. Nikki wouldn't have gone home in such a storm, he realized, so she had to be somewhere in this godforsaken shithole of a house. His eye fell on the stairs to the attic, and reluctantly, remembering what had happened the last time he went up there, he climbed the narrow staircase. Right, Franklin? You're such an angel. I love you. Franklin, I love you. Why don't you ever tell me you love me, too? He shone the flashlight around the dusty room, illuminating piles of boxes. The lightning made their shadows seem to dance and jump and whip the hair back and forth, and the wind caused the whole room to creak as if it were alive. In spite of himself, Terry felt cold dread move through his body. "Stop it, Terry," he told himself. "You're letting your imagination play tricks because of what you found up here last time. This house is not haunted, and there's nothing to be afraid of." Maybe Nikki is even back downstairs by now, he thought. He turned to leave, but then his eye fell on the closed closet door where he'd found the silver prince. No, there's no reason for Nikki to be in there, he thought. The feeling of dread became stronger. This is ridiculous. ridiculous, he told himself. It's just a closet. He reached out and slowly pulled the door open in frozen shock. There, crumpled in a half-sitting position, was a body. It had the handle of a large carving knife sticking out of its chest. But this was no dummy, as the Silver Prince had been. In the flashlight's beam, there was no mistake. The staring, lifeless blue eyes behind the thick, black-rimmed glasses. It was Les Whittle.
Alright, this is the last chapter I'm doing. I'm part 2 of 3 of Fear Street's Halloween Party. Hey, Lax dude, send me some money.
Please.
Come on. Your kids don't really need braces.
Chapter number 12.
Very funny, Les, Terry said out loud, hoping he was wrong. He reached out and touched him. Les felt warm.
All right, Les, he said. Cut it out. It's me, Terry. We're on the same team. Remember, we're homosexuals.
Les didn't answer. He lay there, staring, not blinking, his eyes like marbles. A pulse, Terry said. Where's your pulse, Les? He felt Les's wrist, then at the base of his throat. There was no movement. He put his fingers in front of Les's mouth, but there was no breath. Now, Terry stared hard at Les's chest, trying not to think about the knife handle protruding from it, like that fucking scene in Aliens where the alien pops out, but instead of popping out, it was a knife blade popping in. If only there was a word for what happens when someone pops a knife blade into someone's body, but there isn't a word specific to that.
No movement. None. At all.
No. Terry said to himself, no!
No, 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 no.
Sorry, I had to make sure that I got the right number of no's. I poked my thumbnail each time on a no.
Na, 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 na. Drugs, give me drugs, give me drugs.
Alright, this can't be real. It's another joke, another surprise. It's gotta be.
Don't be dead, Les, he said. Please don't be dead.
But Les didn't answer. His unblinking eyes continued to stare out of his pale, pale face like the eyes of a department store mannequin. Scarcely able to stand, Terry backed out of the closet. His heart was beating so hard he could hear it pounding in his ears. Shaking, he made his way back downstairs. His legs felt weak and rubbery, as if he were trying to walk underwater or in a dream. Or maybe a dream where he's underwater, and in the underwater dream he could breathe, but it's still really difficult to walk around, so it wasn't a very good dream. But he got to see fish, and he was really excited years later when Finding Nemo came out, but he's kind of iffy on the Finding Nemo sequel because it looks pretty stupid and no one really cares about Dory because she was kind of the Jar Jar Binks of that movie. Anyway, please let it be a dream, he thought. He had nearly reached the living room when a light shone in his face. It was David just coming out of the bathroom. Hey, Terry, David said with surprise. What happened to you? You look like you've seen a...
Les is dead,
Terry said dully. What? It's true. I just found him in the closet upstairs. Hey, you're serious, aren't you? Said David. Terry couldn't think of an answer, but then David's eyes narrowed in suspicion. Hey, wait a minute, he said. You're trying to get back at me for the Silver Prince trick, aren't you?
Les is dead, Terry replied. He has a knife in his fucking chest.
Vodka.
And you're going to show it to me, right? Said David. And then Les will jump up and yell, gotcha. He's never going to yell anything again, Terry said. He could feel himself starting to come out of the shock. I don't care if you believe me. I've got to phone for help.
Wait a minute, said David. Let's go back upstairs. Maybe what you saw was another trick.
No, said Terry.
Sure,
said David. Remember how Alex looked? You were sure that was real, too.
I don't think it's a trick, said Terry.
But he felt like a little flicker of hope. For the first time since, he saw the corpse of his dead-ass friend. He went back up the stairs with David. As they started the last flight to the attic, Terry forced himself to be calm. I don't want to see Les's body again, he thought. But maybe David's right. Maybe I saw something and just thought it was Les. His hands were still shaking as he reached out to open the closet door. The closet was empty. I knew it, said David. This was just a trick to get me up here, right? What's next? A pie in the face? Terry just stared at the empty closet, relief flooding through him like a dam breaking. It hadn't been real. Maybe he was just going crazy. But having hallucinations was better than less being dead. Terry! Now David sounded concerned. You all right? He was here, Terry said. Exactly the way I described it. I guess I must have... He stopped talking as his flashlight beam picked up something on the bottom of the closet. What is it? Asked David, and then he saw it too. A thick, dark puddle on the closet floor, trembling. Terry reached down to touch it. His hand came away wet and sticky and red. There's more, David said. Now his voice was shaking too. Leading from the closet were drops and smears of blood. Without a word, the boys followed the trail around the piles of boxes in the attic, followed it to a window in the back. The window was open and rain slanted in, soaking the worn floorboards. A single smear of blood streaked the wall below the windowsill. Terry didn't believe his heart could pound so loud and fast. What had happened to Les's body? It's L-E-S apostrophe S. Don't you just put an apostrophe after the first S? Or was that a creative choice, R-L? I trust you, R-L. I'm just saying. Had it gotten up from the closet and escaped through the window? Had Les somehow joined the undead in the Fear Street woods? I'm going to look outside, David said. He turned... he sounded more frightened than Terry felt. Slowly, David pushed the window the rest of the way, open and stuck his head out into the rain. Terry crowded next to him. They spotted it the same time. There, directly below them, on the peaked roof of the second-story dormer, lay Les's crumpled body, the knife glinting in the lightning. God damn, this is way heavier than Goosebumps. Whew! Alright, that concludes part 2 of 3. This probably won't be on DuneReadsGoosebumps.com because the whole system is set up to work in chunks of 2. So, you know, go figure. This will be up on iTunes. I'm Dune. This is Dune Reads Goosebumps. I'll get back to more regular. It might take me, again, this long to do this. I would like to get back to regular and just doing normal Goosebumps books. Like I said, this was a mistake. I have no idea what I ranted about because it's been days and I've been really drunk every time I've done this, but I'm going to go get this up tonight. So I'm going to go hop upstairs, finish this cocktail, edit this shit, walk Franklin, lay down in bed, and wish my girlfriend was here, and watch Sliders. That's kind of my plan. So, you know, I only have one piece of advice for you.
That's a good transition, right?
No. Pretty shitty. That being said, you should still stay spooky, bitches.
It's been a long time coming. Ain't never gonna stop, man. A lot of pain, a lot of triumph. Now I come to the point where I'm happy. You could break me out this straight jacket. This hip hop is display action. I switch off and I keep smashing. I'm a legend, fuck the rap off. They say I can't do my thing. I'ma build my own lane. You come in, you get ran over. But damn, he's sober. I'm the god MC like Hova. But I'm on another level and my grind is over. Put the heat on your back like you're sitting in Rovers. And you always pray to God, I'm just bringing them closer. Feel like I'm doing the bid in my mind in Angola. You be fooled that I'm cool, they try to get over. I stop picking up my phone, they won't get any closer. They watch my every step because I'm living in motion. Seen it in the hood, I can't feel it's just open. They ask for my money every other day like I'm asking for something. But when I had nothing, they was laughing. They told me that I'd never make it rapping. It brings tears to see them on top. But I told you I'ma make it. 14, I was living like my life is the pavement. And I wanted to die, couldn't nobody save me. Now I save my own self and I'm on and I'm famous. And I deal with the haters. Ain't nobody gon' take away what I built. Fuck the death threats, small imposters.
They really got the love, but they just choosing that option. When I start to live better, they started to hate. I still got the same brain that caught all them cases. I still got the same eyes that seen all them places. But I ain't never been faking. And it's not a game, it's not the trailblazers. Throwing shots, but we dying. Man, the rap game is the slave trade. No time for meditation. Turning to robots, the devil is money. It's not even human. The people die for a piece of paper. It's so stupid. Better when you, man, live however you do it. I guarantee you see your life as a child. And making you your all, just make sure that you smile. People are dying every day. Minds look at me now. They was hating, but I never stopped. I wanted to drive good bass guy. Gave me strength in advance. I gotta really go, this my chance. Make history, man. Three back, I was feeling like damn. Shit, you know how I felt when I was washing my hands. Off that filth that was around, I'd never be down. On the streets I'm gone, I'd never be around. Because the hood is a lie. Man, you better rake up before you're dead of surprise. I'm just trying to save myself, man, for real. But they trapped in the middle. Don't want to go to school because the teacher too simple. I just want to know where I come from. Just tell me the truth before I'm going to dissolve. Man, it's connected to the woods. The wilderness is my home. The world say I'm bad because my color. But they don't get the fact I said that I love you. People give the option to hustle. Just take it. And I swear to God, if you're willing to struggle, and once you pass the bottom, you gon' get to the top. It's a lot of hate up in the world. Just make sure that you watch. Lil B.